closing main breaker.
And you know what that means, boys and girls.
It's time for the Chico
Show. All right.
Woohoo!
Woo. Okay, we didn't test out. This is going to be an interesting show. Jimmy Doan here along with Counselor Curtis.
Hey, how you doing?
And
and that's all we got.
That's all we got, right? We don't have the engineer here, which of course is going to mean the mix down ought to be interesting.
It is going to be weird.
And Jack Rhodes couldn't make it tonight.
Yep.
He had other engagements.
Yep.
But this is, here it is, it's Siete de Mayo.
567.
That's right. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
567, that's right. There was somebody was saying that it, you know, 1 minute after 2 at 3 o'clock and whatever it is, it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
10, something like that. Okay, good.
Watch out.
So anyway, today is Sunday evening, and we're going to have a really nice show. And there's just, this will be like the old days.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff to talk about.
A lot of good stuff. I'm going to go through the list in just a second here. But first, I just want to give a shout out and a hello to our loyal and faithful listeners.
Yeah, who we got listening?
Okay, let me just tell you. UK is here again, big deal. Finland. We have a bunch of people for some reason are checking in from Moscow, and I said like in Russia, Moscow.
Perestroika.
That's right. We're in good shape. France, eh bien, comment ça va?
Oh, I've got some French updates too. Now it's really too bad this show didn't go out earlier because the French election was today, I believe.
It was, and he won, not her.
Good. Oh, thank God.
Well, you say that. Let me tell you, I've got a little note on that.
Okay, we'll talk about
because
it.
Because they quote him as being the ultra conservative neo Nazi. Yeah, no. In socialist circles, maybe, but we'll talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
The Netherlands, I don't know who that is, down in Den Haag in the Netherlands, more Moscow, Australia, hey, good day, mate. And Canada, again, that might be our friend Stefan, I don't know, he's doing...
Could be anybody.
Could be anybody. Ukraine is there. Our friends in Tennessee, Ocala, Woodbury, Tennessee, and then we got our usual crowd in Coralville, Iowa. Knoxville, Tennessee, and in Sverige, hey, goodbye. Who more historic?
Ja, förstår inte svenska.
Ja, förstår inte svenska, men jag talar lite grann. That's right. That's good.
Ja, vill ha lite pengar, tack.
That's right, yeah. Får jag lite pengar? You can send the pengar to our donation button. China, again, we're getting in China. I guess that's what you would expect. In Puerto Rico, lo siento, pero mi español no es bueno. So that's it for the...
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you all for tuning in. I did make a mistake, and I reset all the counters.
We saw that.
We have a little counter thing that tells about... I don't know how many people actually go through that counter. So if you go to the website and have the feed blitz get you, we don't know about anything about that. That's secret. But if you happen to go to the website to pick up the show, we get a little...
We know who you are.
Well, you know who you are. That's right. And I reset it. Everybody got trashed about 3 days ago.
So you're safe now.
I know, but that's right. Everybody that checked in prior to May 2nd is safe. Because I had no idea. I wanted to reset one of the little counters on there, and it turned out I blanked everything. And a little sign came up. It says, if you do this, now you do understand there's no recovery from this. This is jumping off the cliff, no net. And I said, okay. Shows you how much I know.
I'm in.
Computers are my forte.
So anyway, let me just go through the list, and I'm going to go through the list, but the way we cover this may not be in this order. I know it's hard to believe. Prosecutors want Paris in jail.
Saw that as a light note, actually.
Okay. Well, for some reason, it came in last, and
it's important, though. Actually, I got something to say about it.
Okay. The House. Now, a lot of this stuff interesting. The federal House of Representatives has backed an expanded hate crime law. Bush has threatened a veto. This is federal protection for gay people.
I got a comment on that.
I bet. House panel approves $48 billion for spying.
It's a drop in the bucket.
A drop in the bucket, that's right. The Senate has decided that pet foods need labeling, which I can sort of understand because of the old people, of course, eat pet food. So, you know. Bush wants the phone firms immune from privacy suits. That is not, when I say privacy suit here, I'm not talking about, underwear or a really nice suit or anything. We're talking about the legal suits, right? Yeah. National ID card. This was kind of an op-ed piece, but it still brought home some things. The national ID card is a disaster in the making. Here in Florida, guess what? They changed our primary date. They want to play. They want to play with the big boys. Interesting. And we'll talk a little bit about how that's worked out in the past. Interesting. A new international panel, has reached a consensus on global warming, and that'll be our GW update. In Illinois, they've decided to have universal health care, and they're facing some problems. Surprise, surprise. In New York, the education system, in spite of the fact that they're throwing wads of money at the education system, they have problems. Surprise. The big news, though, I love. This is the one I love. It's too bad that Jack's not here, because he loves Hugo.
Hugo.
Chavez is threatening to take over the steel industry. There is, on so many levels, we're going to chat about this. That actually may come to the top of the list. Because this points out so many things on about three different levels that people need to understand. 20 million chickens held hostage because of bad food, I guess, or something. Virulent new strain of TB is on the rise. And I thought that was interesting, again, on a couple of levels. So many of the stuff, these headlines that I read to you, at first glance, you may not get the full import of them, but that's why I'm here. Imus lawyer could have cut his remarks. Apparently, Imus is fighting back to get his $6 million. And of course, I don't know if I'm even going to go into this, but I didn't realize how many shock radio jocks there were. But there was an article in the New York Times about how the shock jocks are making hay with the Imus thing, and apparently out Imusing, and only being some of them being suspended and some of them not being suspended at all. I think a lot of it depends on their markets. Let's see, the French president, which one did you want to talk about? So anyway, I was talking about, the reason I mentioned this on the list, and we may not get to everything here today because it's just the two of us and we're going to run out of things, not out of things to say, but of dry mouth or something. the deal is that this reminds me of, we've talked about before, the Lex Luthor comment about the gum wrapper.
Yes.
And we have that here someplace, but I don't know where. Maybe when DJ Laura enters it in, she can find it.
Some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story. Others can read the ingredients on a chewing gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe.
And that's what I'm here for, again.
Woo!
So I can divine the secrets of the universe from some of these stories. Or I'll make it up anyway as I go along. It doesn't really matter. I did notice one thing on the top of the list here is... Sarkozy, who apparently is a immigrant from someplace.
Hungary, I think.
Is it Hungary? Yes. Has been elected
his
French
dad.
President.
Right.
And, yeah, dad,
Vive
right.
Vive la France!
Vive la France, right. ABM. And they call him a conservative.
Right.
And, of course, he was running against some babette or whatever.
Right.
She was not unattractive.
No, she was hot.
And not like in Italy where they run hookers. And actually, they win. It was a prostitute that won in the, not the premiership or anything, but your presidency, but it was in the Italian house of prostitute of the of not a prostitute anyway. But apparently Sarkozy got 53% of the vote, and it's a 5-year term. And
good.
Well, okay, is it? He's labeled as a conservative.
Well, next to Segolene.
Well, yes. Oh, no question. She was an out and out socialist. Well,
right.
One of the things that I've often looked for is that when you, and we're going to talk about this, matter of fact, I'm going to put that next in the thing is about Hugo, because that it dovetails into Hugo. The deal is that once you have somebody that does actually put the socialist machine in motion, it doesn't take long for all the bad things to show up, and you realize pretty quickly that it can't work, never has, never will, and so forth. And it's always interesting to me to see how the country of John Locke, for instance, and Voltaire has degenerated into near socialism as they have to this point.
Yeah, I mean, she was standing up there, people waving signs, and her platform was basically spend more on education and research, raise the minimum wage,
right,
increase the federal pension funds, subsidize jobs for all the young people.
Right.
I mean, it was... just pure socialism.
Pure socialism, right. And, of course, that's whose expense. Well, the question that it's always asked, you need to ask about this, We're going to raise the minimum wage at whose expense? We're going to raise the minimum wage. We're going to pay for all this education, but who's paying for that again?
She's one of those people who just believes the government can do it. Unlimited resources.
Right, unlimited, right.
And they don't come from anywhere. You know, you can take these resources.
You have a magic wand.
Right.
It's right out of Harry Potter. Yeah. I wave my wand and resources
appear.
And all
these things will happen.
That's right. I don't have to print money. I can just print a Peugeot or whatever. I can print the stuff. You know, the deal is that although opinion polls regularly suggested that voters preferred Royale, who was seeking to become the France's first woman head of state, they saw the uncompromising Sarkozy as a more competent leader with a more convincing economic program. Well, yeah, okay.
So what do you got against him?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to yellow line it the way I should. Let me just... He is apparently a little bit of an authoritarian. One of the things that I have found about conservatives is that they're still statists, no matter what. I mean, they're still statists. They holler about less government, smaller government, and more freedom and so forth, but they do mean to govern. I mean, they do mean to have a state. And if you don't like what they do, they're going to force you to do the right thing. They have no problem about using the military to put down, this is the law and order people. He was
quoted during those riots that happened a year ago or so as saying he was going to wash those people out of the streets with the hoses, basically.
Right. Well, he promised a clean break with the policies of Chirac, once his political mentor, and says he will curb the powers of the unions and toughen sentencing for criminals. Well, of course, who's a criminal these days? I mean, anybody. Yeah, of course, right. Here in the United States, anybody is. But curb the power of the unions, okay, fine. Good luck on that in France, because France is different from here. The unions are I think there's twice as many percentage-wise people in unions over there, number one. And they've got, you know, the automatic guaranteed 1 month off and the August
35-hour work
35-hour and on and on. I mean, you start to encroach on that, and I'm telling you, you're talking about riots in the streets, and then you will get the hoses out, and then what happens?
Well, I wonder, because... The thing about the unions is their strength is the people. And if the people see some reasonableness to the policies, then the unions won't come around to oppose it.
Nice thought.
I think there's...
there's hope?
Yeah, I do. I think you let the unions organize, do whatever they're going to do. You don't let them riot. I agree with him. You don't let the kids riot in the street. You do hose them out of there.
Okay, I can tell... You do.
Yeah. Well, you can't allow rioting. That's not allowed. They can do a sit-in if they want, or actually a sit-out, I would assume. If you want to get everybody to strike, that's the real power of the union. That's the ultimate power of the union is nobody goes to work, and they've got nobody to do the work.
Of course, here, what was it, the Firestone plant or whatever, they had the sit-in, and the Supreme Court said it was okay.
That's
in the 30s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there have been some mistakes.
And that was one of them. Yeah.
And of course, the big busting up of the one union rally, I mean, a few times government troops or authoritarian cops have been used to...
Government thugs.
Right. Have been used to strong-arm the unions out of their tactics. And,
right.
Of course, now we've got
Of course, the question is, here's where the balance is on something like that. If the union, if they march, it's one thing to march down the Champs-Élysées or on the Boulevard Saint-Michel or something like that, as they are wont to do over there. I mean, I can tell you, at the drop of a hat, the students from the Sorbonne will stream out into the streets and march up and down. It's one thing to march up and down the street, but when they start throwing bricks at McDonald's, hey.
Well, exactly. I mean, that's what we had
here with the Watts stuff and some of the riots when Rodney King and all that stuff, and they go on this rampage where they destroy private property. And
you can peacefully assemble. You can do it the MLK way. You can walk wherever you want to walk in en masse.
Well, of course, you can't. You have to have a permit. A lot of times what they do is when they do martial law or when they do the permitting stuff, a lot of times they'll say if a gathering of any more than three or more needs a permit. I've seen that. Three or more.
I know. And that's ridiculous, in my opinion. They should be able to get together. You should have freedom of assembly. It's in the First Amendment. It makes sense.
Well, they don't. As you well know, in this town, if you wanted to get 100 people on the public square, you'd need a permit.
Absolutely, which I disagree with. And of course, we've seen some of that just this last week, the immigration rally out in Los Angeles.
Right. Well, now, there was a big hoorah about that. There was some, shall we say, as usual, one of the things you don't want to do as a cop anymore is the Rodney King thing, because everybody's got a cell phone camera, and apparently a lot of this was caught, huh?
It was. I emailed everybody a video
And I mean, is it incriminating? I didn't get a chance to see it.
It looks bad for them.
It looks bad.
It does. It does. What I've seen at large scale gatherings, when the police feel like things are getting out of control, there is no established policy for how they're supposed to deal with an out of control mob.
Not Kent State, though. You don't want to be blasting them.
Right. And but that's what ultimately happens, or at least
they are armed.
Right.
They've got guns.
I personally have been swung at with a baton.
Really?
Because I was standing in the wrong place. I didn't even know that anything was happening, and the police were trying to clear out a perimeter around an arrest that they were making.
Yeah.
And I just sort of walked into the area, and they were clearing out the perimeter by swinging their batons at the crowd. And all of a sudden, I was at the front of the crowd.
Because everybody else had hoofed it.
Right.
They had enough brains to get. Now you're an attorney, for God's sakes. You know you think
it was Halloween. Okay, I'm in Coconut Grove, Miami,
and you're wearing a costume.
I'm wearing a Lawrence of Arabia costume, and
all
like of a sudden,
the KKK, of course.
Of course, I'm an Arab at that point, but this is pre 9/11. And they started swinging it.
And this is a Halloween riot. They were arresting somebody for what? Too much
candy.
They
were arresting somebody for fighting. The problem was...
I love it. So here's the way we're going to arrest you for fighting. We're going to beat the shit out of you.
Exactly. And that was actually caught on tape and aired on the news down in Miami.
Really?
But the problem is that the public has no policy to follow in terms of...
I thought they had rules of engagement for this sort of thing.
Well, if they're there, nobody knows about them. Like, for example, you don't know...
The public might not know, but the police are supposed to know. They're supposed to have rules of engagement.
Well, and they may
don't,
have...
Don't take out your baton unless 14 people or something, or...
What I'm saying is that since the public doesn't know how to respond to...
Doesn't know what the rules are.
Right. Then you get all this confusion.
Right.
If there was a rule, for example, that... You could stand and stare if somebody was getting arrested, but you can't approach within 20 or 50 feet or something like that.
Are you allowed to film it?
Yes, you are. But of course, you know, if they see somebody filming it, they're likely to go over there and try to take the camera.
Under what pretext?
Just because.
Oh, I see. The because pretext. yes, that one.
Well, seriously,
I thought about that a couple of times because here, I've been driving just for last, because I carry a camera. Who doesn't carry a camera with them these days? I mean, I don't have one on a cell phone, but I have one, a little one that I carry on my in my belt here. It's just a little tiny one, but it does a heck of a job. It's a surprisingly good camera, a little Sony, and it'll do, actually, it's, even though it's a still camera, it'll actually do a short video, 20, 30 seconds at a pop. And the memory card in there, it'll hold like, 20 minutes worth of something if I want to do it. Anyway, I thought about this a couple of times. I'm driving towards the store down here, and I see cops pulled over, and I'm thinking, well, this would be kind of fun to film this. And I've been a little nervous, though.
Right.
Pulling over and pulling out the old camera and shooting it.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. We don't know, as the public, for example, we know what your rights are when you get arrested. You have
right.
the right to remain silent.
Well, that's why you hand out your little cards.
Well, exactly.
People have been writing in for those, like get out of jail free cards.
Well, we'll post them on the internet and make them available to people, and the new cards where you tape over your mouth too.
Right. I love that.
But the point is, the public doesn't know what you can and can't do around a police activity.
Right.
And without that being promulgated, there's confusion, and then you get people. Like in this situation, you had people sort of pseudo trying to interfere. They were walking up to the police where the man was arrested and pointing at him and yelling at the police. And you don't know, for example, can you yell? Can you talk to him? Can you use an obscenity? What can you do to...
If you're standing 20 feet away and you say, what the hell are you doing to that guy?
Exactly. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
And there needs to be some sort of published policy about these types of activities. Because what it should be, you should be able to assemble wherever you want with as many people as you want, and you should be able to say anything.
Right.
But beyond that, if you pick up a brick and heave it at the cop car, obviously that's aggression against
right.
persons and property, and you can be hosed away for that.
You wonder, of course, this came up when I was listening to some tapes that I got, an unabridged version of Ayn Rand's book. It was called It was about the virtue of selfishness, and it's pretty good, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. She was one of the basic libertarian philosophies is you cannot do aggression unless you've been aggressed on, sort of thing. You have to, you can retaliate. Self-defense is okay. And of course, the question in this day and age, and this is one of the things that they do, is when are you allowed a preemptory strike? I mean, if your next door neighbor is building one of those huge catapults, and it's obviously aimed at your house, and it's a what do they call that? What do they call that? One, the medieval catapult that they used to use, the one that they tried to throw the Buick with or something. It has a special name, and for some reason I am not remembering. Anyway, it's like a catapult. So your neighbor's building one of these things, and he's loaded up with all the rocks. And you know, at what point are you allowed to say, "Wait a minute, this looks like aggression to me"? What do we know? What point are you allowed to stop? I wonder.
Well, and to me, the line is imminency.
Ah.
If it's going to happen, if you can reasonably assert that there's going to be some aggression.
Hey, it's artwork.
Well, you know, for example, a guy's got a big knife and he's walking towards your front door with a scowl on his face.
Yeah.
At what point can you shoot him?
Right.
And
well, here I think you have to. The rule is you drag him in the house after you shoot him. I mean, you're not if they're outside, you're in trouble. If they're inside, it's okay.
Well, it certainly makes it a stronger case if they're inside your house, as opposed to on the sidewalk.
Now, let me ask you this. What are all these blood strains from the front, from the middle of your sidewalk up to your front door and into your house here? You know, he crawled out and back in again, I guess is what it was.
We digress sort of off of the riot situation. We're talking about, the French president over there. And what you can and can't do.
Well, I can tell you this much. I know from personal experience that for some reason, I don't know what it is, but the French students especially have a propensity to tear up the streets. I mean, they'll do it in a heartbeat. There'll be 100,000 of them in the streets in no time at all in Paris. And they'll be, and just by virtue of that many, when they stumble against something, there's so many of them. I mean, there's going to be damage is going to be done.
Well, my thought is, if it's intentional damage, then it's a crime. And if it's just damage because, you know, they trounced up a lawn because there were so many of them, well, what are you going to do?
Well, I tell you, the thing is, that's a judgment call, of course, on the spot by the gendarmes. And that's when the old hoses come out. I mean, the hoses are sitting there. And one of the things is, if you've got that tool, you're going to wave it, I guess, kind of thing. I've often felt, and this is... when you go back in history, you find out until fairly recently, in galactic terms, as you know, the London police were unarmed. They were bobbies and they carried a nightstick and that was it. And when Adam Smith went through some of the in one of his lectures, he went through the relevance or not the relevance but the propensity for crime in Paris and in London. And what he found out was that here's what he found out: there were fewer cops in London. Much less crime. They didn't carry any arms. And the rule book was something that everybody could... It was like a little 28 or 50-page rule book that every bobby carried around with them that told them what the law was, essentially. Paris, on the other hand, was loaded up with people that were armed, had twice or three times as many police on the street, and crime was, you know, four times the level. He used this I don't know whether it's civility or whatever it is, but I do know that it does appear that the more laws you have, the more crime you have. And laws propagate. Laws breed new laws. And we see this all the time here. They call it tightening up. I can tell you, every time they're getting ready to pass some more laws here. And I can tell you right now, you might as well just set up the hearing dates for the ones that are going to be to, quote, fix those, because they never get it right the first time. They breed like hydras. I mean, and you don't even have to cut the head off before two more come on. But what I'm saying is that for some reason in Paris, at the drop of a hat, they will have thousands and thousands of people marching in the streets. I maybe they keep these signs on permanent alert or permanently in their garages or basements or something, but they can put out a street march in without the internet. They've been able to do it in, you know, an hour. Nowadays, I guess they can do it like these raves or something. You know, you just let's go riot this afternoon.
Well, it seems to me that this goes back to Frederick Bastiat in 1850, and the way to make law respected is to make the law respectable.
Right.
And the more unrespectable the law is,
well, then not only and one of the ways it gets unrespectable is because there's too many of them.
Right.
They conflict, they overlap, and they are at odds with one another. And you can be obeying one and not obeying another one. And when do you know which one are you going to get? As you know, of course, the district attorneys can indict a ham sandwich. You can be stopped anymore here for anything, virtually anything, and they're armed. I mean, you know, you dare not give them any lip. You know, lip is assault these days, I think. I mean, if you are ginger about taking back your driver's license, is that a battery or something?
It can be, and of course, that's a problem. But it's a growing problem. In fact, they did a big piece on 60 Minutes about the no snitching culture. That is, there's a big subculture that says you don't call the cops. And I tell people, you know, you don't call the cops unless people are dying. And I don't mean like they've been shot and they're dying. Then you call the ambulance. I mean, they're still getting shot.
Right.
And that's the only time that you're calling the authorities, because when they sweep in these days, they're coming in hard. And
well, as somebody said, I saw this the other day where, if everybody's armed, for instance, you know, they're getting ready. It reminded me a little bit of watching Danny Glover here just recently in Predator 2 or something. But the thing is, they sweep in, and here you are, you've shot the burglar.
Right.
And
you're holding the gun.
You're holding the gun. Right. Guess what? They're going to be all over you. There've been a couple of movies made like that, too. And, of course, if you're black, guess what? You are the perpetrator.
Right.
So even if you've just defended yourself, you could be a, you know, PhD from the Cape. And you shot the white guy who came through the door to rob you, and guess what? You're dead man.
Yeah, it's a bad scene, and the more laws that we have that are contrary to basic natural rights.
Right. Well, laws, actually, I've always thought that laws were supposed to codify, basically lay out what you already knew.
Yeah.
And pass that when you try. Now, certainly if you try and legislate morality, or if you try and legislate the way things ought to be, the way you'd like them to be, and that's what they do here in Gainesville all the time. They have their vision, they call it,
right,
and then they pass laws to that outlines their vision,
right,
and they do it for, quote, the good of the community. One of the things that they do it mostly for the good of the people that voted for them, as much as any, which is, can be here locally, is like 9 or 10% of the populace, of the electorate, and they are, it's a political, very often a lot of these laws are political in nature, in that they're designed to their feel good. But one of the things that I've seen is they talk about, well, this is for the whole community. Well, of course, right away, what would you need a law for?
Right.
If everybody is in agreement on this thing, you don't need to pass a law.
Well, here's my thought on that. I mean, you can legislate some morality in, for example, take battery. I mean, it's immoral, in my opinion, to go hit somebody.
In battery, you don't even have to hit anybody for battery, do you?
Well, but let's just say, you know, you have to touch them. And let's just say
you don't have to touch them if you yank the card out of the cop's hand.
Well, you have to cause them to be touched. I know.
Give me a break.
Well, that works. I mean, you throw a rock at a cop, that's battery.
I understand that, but I mean, if you gingerly yank your driver's license back from him, and they get you for battery.
I think you'd probably get a motion to dismiss. Greg.
You got
to
go in, though. Come on.
Well, I agree. But look, when you're out in the field, you don't mess with the police, okay? If you're out there.
And that's, okay, that's,
you know,
right.
They can whack you with a stick.
Right, and, no, I know. And they do.
Right.
Did you see the video of that?
I did see the video.
What happened?
Well, what happened apparently was they had a nice, big, peaceful assembly to some extent.
Now, this was Cinco de Mayo. This was the immigration. It was an immigration rally, right?
Right, exactly. And they had 100,000 people out there or something, or actually,
the usual,
right, it was smaller than usual,
right,
but it was, you know, a nice crowd. And then apparently a group of those people decided they were going to make some trouble,
a subgroup,
mm-hmm. and the police swept in.
Agitated.
And decided to disperse the entire crowd.
100,000. Ooh, yeah.
And of course they're using rubber bullets and batons. They're whacking girls, film people. And, I mean, literally, you see them whacking film people, like women. And it's like, geez, that's a little rough, don't you think? But I've seen this over the last decade since I was swung at. I've watched various riot, quote-unquote riots, and dispersion techniques.
It's escalating?
It is. And
yeah.
You saw that one girl get killed up in Boston. They shot her with a beanbag. It hit her just wrong, killed her.
Uh-huh.
And just some person going to the baseball game.
Yeah.
And she just happened to be in the crowd that they decided to disperse.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, because they need to go back and remember the line that, that should be drawn, which is peaceful assembly is okay. Words are okay.
Yeah.
Once you start whacking things or destroying property, and the libertarian philosophy is, unless you're going to hurt somebody or their stuff, you should be able to do whatever you want to do.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so,
exactly, yeah.
And so, but what the police should do is wait for whoever it is. You know, when they see the guy throwing the brick through the window, you go grab that guy.
Right.
And the crowd will back you on that. The crowd will back you on the on nabbing the violent person. But once you start nabbing like all their buddies, just because they're standing around, or anybody else, or clearing out a perimeter, you're gonna draw a lot of criticism. You're gonna draw the contempt of the crowd. And things get out of hand.
And not only that, as you well know,
the more you tighten your grip, Doc, the more star systems will slip through your fingers.
That's what happens. I figured out the sound effects here.
Oh, God. Oh, no. We're going
down.
Watch out. We're going down the list. I'm not particularly sure that particular one goes with what we're talking about here, but it's.
Well, I was talking about the tightening of the grip in terms of the extension of the laws. The more laws they pass, the harder it's going to be for the police in the field. To
they got
to
memorize them all.
Well, and
or
it's
don't.
Not only that, but
they're going to generalize, of course.
Well, they're going to overreach, and as they overreach, the public is going to react.
Well, I can tell you, anybody will tell you, if you've been smacked by anything, there is an emotional rush that you have no control over for at least a couple of seconds. I mean, there's no way that you can avoid if you've been pained, hit pain. There is no rationality to the immediate response there at that point. You are out of control, I can tell you from. And that's the problem, I would say. When you wade into a crowd and start smacking people, every one of them, exactly, every one of them that you smack, you've got to expect, unless they're out cold,
there's going to be some resistance.
There is going to be, until even the most rational person, I believe this, I could be wrong, but I believe this as much as anything, the most rational, under control person in the world, when you hit that rush, if you want, anti-rush or whatever you want to call it, to me is phenomenal. That you, for a couple of seconds until you can get control of yourself and realize where you are, there is this rage that is just blinding. And of course, sometimes that's a defense. Of course, I've seen that.
Yeah.
But that you are instigating and you are promulgating that if you wade into the crowd, it seems to me.
Right.
That ought to be like the super last resort. You can't imagine.
It should be. And unfortunately, I think it's getting worse. And
I do too. I agree with you on that. And what happens is what you find out is as it becomes worse, you have the public clamoring. I remember this from the 70s, for God's sakes, when they were in the Vietnam era, I remember. That you have the public clamoring for the law and order president.
Right.
And what that means is we're going to do prior restraint.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of prior restraint, you know, and that's why you've got to go get the permit. More than,
right.
And you, if you have more than 3 or 4 or 9 or whatever the number is in that particular town, you get 20 people together and suddenly it's a conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I tell you, this is where the tightening of the noose is headed. Now that clip makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
You did well.
Well, and so to bring this back to France, I'm not worried that this guy is so bad. The stuff that I heard that Sarkozy was saying was not so bad. I mean, he was talking about allowing the work week to be extended.
Allowing it to be extended. That's interesting. Interesting, because, you know, here you wouldn't allow the work week to be extended in this country. It's 40 hours and then time and a half for overtime. You can imagine if somebody said, we're going to allow people to pay straight time for 50 hours, say. Don't have to pay overtime.
Well, I mean, it's just, when I say allow, what I mean in that regard is repealing some law that restricts it.
Right. Well, that's what I just said. I mean, here we have a law that restricts your punch-in type people to 40 hours, and if you tried to repeal any part of that, you'd be lynched. That's not going to pass.
I don't know. They seem to say he's got some support for that.
It'll be interesting to see, I guess.
Yep.
And that is, but one of the things that I have found, and we're going to talk a little bit about this with Hugo, is that once a lot of these laws are in effect, the old adage, there's nothing so permanent as a temporary program. And, of course, something that's been passed as a permanent program is really, until the country fails, it's going to be there no matter what. We've seen this. I can't tell you how many times we've seen 100-year-old laws, to the good and the bad. I remember one Supreme Court decision. They said, I think it was in the 1960s, they dusted off a 1791 ruling or something like that, and used it as the what you call it. I thought that was kind of funny. So we'll see what happens.
Well, so it's too bad. I'm glad that everybody in France. I hope you get what you want, and I hope this guy does the right stuff. Apparently, he's going to cut taxes and cut spending. And
well, that'll mean he's now. But of course, he's still left, which is okay as far as I'm concerned. He's still pulled out of Iraq. No friend of America on the war front.
Yeah, that works for me.
Works for me too. I don't have a problem with that. Just don't want to get involved.
All right. So are we on a Hugo?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Hugo.
Hugo Charming. Hugo Charming.
This is great. Well, he is accelerating. This has only been a week now since the last update we had on this guy. And the socialism / totalitarianism takeover, Caesar rules, it is accelerating even faster than Jimmy thought it was going to. I mean, this is amazing. The headline here is Hugo Chavez takes over foreign-controlled oil project. No, I'm sorry. This is the steel. What I lost the way.
Well, he's done both since our last show. He's threatened to take the oil and the steel at this point.
Anyway, the steel, yeah, the oil and the steel, this was takeover, is at what I, the reason that I'm upset about not printing this thing out. We
you
might
want
have,
this one?
Yes, I got it. This is Chavez threatens largest steel maker. President Hugo Chavez said Saturday, this is yesterday, on Cinco de Mayo, that Venezuela's largest steelmaker, Sidor, will not be allowed to make any more exports until it meets domestic needs, and threatened to expropriate the Argentine-controlled company if it resists. I mean, it's a private, internal private company. You know, it's not like they're going to go get U.S. steel or anybody. This is the local boys made bad.
Well, except it's got an Argentinian overarching company.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. I get Venezuela and Argentina mixed up for some reason. I know I shouldn't. So anyway, yeah, Argentina.
They're on the same continent.
Yeah, they're down there somewhere. They speak Spanish. But I love this. Here's the quote. We're going to pass a law. We're going to force you to supply, first and foremost, the Venezuelan domestic market before you take the steel to other countries, the Venezuelan leader said at a news conference. I mean, they're going to force them. Now, here's the note that I wrote on this one to you guys in the little notes that I was going to talk about. Power once obtained is not given up voluntarily. Nationalize one industry and you must end up nationalizing them all. Control one aspect of a nation's economy and the result is total control. Virtually the only thing separating Venezuela from complete subjugation of all its people by a crazed tyrant is the existence of death camps. Mind you, they will occur. But they will be the last item to be discovered for obvious reasons. Even in a free society like the United States, it took a couple of years for us to discover the existence of the relatively speaking, humane torture camps maintained by the CIA. And the reason is that it only requires, according to Ayn Rand, in this tape that I was listening to, the book, Virtue of Selfishness, for a totalitarian, she has a four-point program that denotes a totalitarian society. One is rule by one person, suspension of civil liberties, control of the press and education. Which he's already done. And finally, death camps, or, you know, a detention without trial.
Freedom camps.
And then by definition, at that point, you have a totalitarian, totally repressive society.
Well, there's just no question.
And also, the only thing that he's missing at this point is the death camps. And again, one of the things that rulers are generally pretty good at, when you think about the Gulag and the concentration camps and the burn camps in Germany, so they're pretty good at hiding that for a while.
Well, you know, he's already arresting political people.
Did not know that.
He has. I've seen where certain political people have already been arrested.
I saw where he shut down the opposition newspaper, which is part of the deal, is you want to make sure you have control of the media. And one of the TV stations, too, I think.
And he also did the 40% rule, which is 40% of their programming has to be local, Venezuelan stuff.
Okay.
So he's asserted control.
No more SpongeBob SquarePants. Huh?
Apparently.
Or unless it's in the 60%.
Right. So he's definitely asserting control. I mean, by any rational standard, he is steaming towards Maoist, socialist, Stalinist.
Right, full steam ahead. Well, I find the reason I mention this and why we keep bringing this up is there are certain people, one of them that I listen to him every once in a while, the Jack Clark, who has the Blast the Right podcast. And it's I think he goes up every Friday sometime. And he's a big fan of Hugo's. But this shows you
great.
So
hopefully
much.
Hopefully he'll go down in the same flames.
Well, no, you know, again, I as somebody has once said, I think you always need to keep some lefties around to show you what they're like. I mean, that to be able to point to them and say, woohoo, that's what it could be like, folks. These are the people that are whack jobs. And he is a big fan of Hugo's. You know, this is the going to take all the oil money and distribute it to the poor people, and and everybody will be educated. There'll be health care for everybody, and everything will be nice and perfect in this benevolent society. And that literally, what in the last not even the last 6 months, this is the takeover is almost complete. As I say, we won't. If there are death camps and the squads like that, we won't find about those. Could very well not find out about those for years. What will happen, as always happens, is there'll be rumors that will come out. They'll be denied, and there'll be a bunch of apologists in this country who say, well, no, we would know about those. I mean, that's you can't. He wouldn't do anything like that.
Oh, who would do
that? Yeah, who would do that? I mean, he's for the people.
Right.
And, you know, you have to break a couple of omelets to make an egg. So this is the way that. But I thought this was interesting that the steel industry was, as of yesterday, the latest casualty, and this has been pointed out so eruditely 50 years ago in The Road to Serfdom by Friedrich von Hayek. And basically, what anybody will tell you is you don't have there is no such thing as a mixed economy. You can say, well, part of it will be so a little bit of socialism would be just fine. No, it has to go. There is a steady progression. In this country, it's been, you know, 70 years so far, and it's accelerating. It didn't start with Roosevelt. It started with the populist, you know, the populist in the late 1800s and so forth. But the
Roosevelt accelerated it, and then Johnson
right,
tripled it again,
and Nixon was no help. And George W. Bush the first, you know, he was no help in a lot of the stuff that he did. I mean, they caved to a lot of the particular areas, you know, like the ADA and stuff like that. They went ahead and signed it. And, you know, Nixon, we're all Keynesians now. Hello, what are you talking about? I mean, this at the time when it was just about totally discredited, that's when Nixon finally decided we were Keynesians. I'm thinking, well, you see, you're supposed to say that. You're supposed to say that 30 years ago. You could have gotten away with it. Wage and price controls. I mean, you know, that was what precipitated the malaise, if you want to call it, the advent of Jimmy Carter, the malaise, the stagflation, all of that, you know, was the Nixonian, we're all Keynesians now, control of the economy, wage and price controls and so forth. And it wasn't until, you know, Reagan got in, basically, that he ash-canned a lot of that stuff and then reduced the tax rates from 90%. What always amazes me about this, once you start on any kind of control, and we've seen this before, the free, quote, the free part of the economy are the people that try and get around it. And one of the things I noticed, for instance, when we had wage and price controls, it was really fascinating. As the prices of stuff was starting to skyrocket, they did the wage and price controls. But there are certain things that you can't control. One of them, I remember, was junkyards. And the junkyard people were making a fortune because it was junk. I mean, you know, you use your beat up car, your destroyed car when you're taking it apart. So if you wanted a part, one of the things that is absolutely a truism about price controls is that once you limit the price, you put a ceiling on the price of something, you end up getting none of it, is what it boils down to. If you want any, sorry, there's zero of it left. You put a ceiling price on, because it costs more than that to make it. So if you put a ceiling price on tires of $5, you will get no more tires from the tire manufacturer. Where do you get them? You get them from the junkyard. You have to have it. And suddenly they're $200 at the junkyard. And, you know, they actually had, when they realized that, they started to run around and try and pass some junkyard laws. And it was, but again, the more you squeeze, you know, things go out, it's going to happen. This is when black markets start to show up in spades. And I've always said the black market is the measure of how free a society is. If you don't have a black market, that is to say, if you don't have an illegal market, that means that you're doing pretty good. The government's okay. They're out of the way. The existence of a black market means that the government has screwed up royally. They have really made this bad news.
Well, you're going to get a little black market, a little tiny one, no matter what, because there's going to be people out there who are thieves who are going to sell things cheaper on the black market. No matter, even if everything's totally fair, you're going to have the outlaws who are going to run a little tiny black market. But
well, of course, thievery is illegal.
Well, right.
The market's not so much illegal as the thievery is.
Well, right. I mean,
but they make the market illegal.
Right. Well, I mean, it's illegal to buy stolen products.
Right.
I mean,
but if you don't know.
Right, but there's a should have known standard.
Yeah, right.
I know.
When you, and again, this, I see this on the internet all the time on eBay. When you see a fully licensed copy of Microsoft, whatever the hell it is, you know it's a rip. I mean, for $50, give me a break. You know, come on, it's a ripoff. Something's wrong here.
Right, but you're right. The more the bigger the black market is, the more of a reflection of how poorly the normal market
is
structured.
And the only people that can distort the normal market is the government, because they have the guns. That's where the distortion always occurs. Even when you say, well, this monopoly guy came in, or he owns all the milk, or he does something, and that's what distorts. No, what you'll find is in back of that person is a government rule or regulation of some kind, and you'll guaranteed every single time it is the government that distorts the normal market. And to the extent that you can keep them out of it, you're in pretty good shape.
And that it goes back even further. I mean, you can look back all the way to Plato's Republic.
Yeah.
And you read Plato's Republic, and he starts out, and it sounds good, sounds like a republic.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the end of that book, you realize he's controlling the press, the artists, different industries, all sorts of fringe people, all for the sake of control.
Right.
And it just spirals into a totalitarian.
Totalitarian. It does it every time.
Yeah.
And since before Christ, for God's sake. You know, for God's sakes, hello.
I'm just glad France just slipped out of that one, man.
Well, they haven't. I mean, I tell you, this is something that, this is the typical example I'm thinking. It's a typical example of, one step forward, two steps backwards kind of thing. They've been in a backward slide for I don't know how long, and they still are productive in some areas, but what happens is, in a society like that, there is an inertia that keeps people there, but when the brain drain gets too high because of the stifling, emigrate from France.
Right.
Of course, anymore, it's even harder to emigrate to this country since I saw where they set the new limit. What were they thinking? Legal immigration in this country, 66,000 total for the year?
What? H-1B, they changed it?
Yeah, they changed it.
Well, that's H-1B, whatever it is.
Yeah, but
now that's the high-tech people.
But there's also an H-2B, I think, which is the temporary workers. These are the people that come in, are legally allowed to come in and do and clean, like they work at, they had an article on 2020 or something about the Hamptons. There's guys that come in and do the lawns and everything for those people. They have waiters and stuff like people that are pretty experienced at that kind of stuff, but they use illegals for it, or legals, excuse me. And the Department of Homeland Security has said, no. And they cut the numbers way back. They said that these are legals now. These are people that actually have a card to come in and for 4 or 5 months or something like that, and they have to go home. Not going to happen this year.
I didn't see that. The number used to be 700,000. Last time I checked.
I think they cut it to 66. Some number's been cut down to 66.
I think that's going to be your high-tech first opportunity people.
Could be.
There's a category of people. We don't differentiate anymore by nationality, which we used to. For centuries we had this so many Chinese and so many Japanese and so many... no Poles. And,
right. Well, for a while there were no Chinese, too.
Right. They've gone no people from different countries several different times.
Right.
In the 60s, they decided that was all ethnically racist, so to speak.
And it was.
And so they set a top number, and then it was basically first come, first serve, except that these high-tech money-carrying people were granted sort of top priority.
It seems to me only, if you're going to walk into this country with $250,000 or $1 million and make an investment.
And a PhD education? Come on in.
Yes, here's your certified citizenship. Screw the green card. Here's your citizenship.
Right away.
Yeah.
And now, of course, my thought is, of course, you let them all in because we've been doing for centuries. And
well, this is what Hanger Dog sent us, this thing on the bird feeder. Remember, did you get that thing?
I did. I didn't read it.
Okay, well, the bird feeder thing was this, and this is what we've always said, is if you need to cut off the social net.
Right.
But the bird feeder thing was a guy put out a little bird feeder, and next, because he wanted to watch the little birdies come and feed. Well, it wasn't too long, to make a long story short, it wasn't too long before the birds were pissed off at the bird feeder. One thing, they were flying at him, pecking him and stuff like that, and messing up, pooping all over.
They were pissed off because he wasn't refilling it?
Yeah, weren't refilling it enough or something. They'd hang out and squawk and make all kinds of racket. And then we walk outside and there's bird poop everywhere and they're flying, at him and pecking him and everything. And finally he says, I've had it. Takes away the bird feeder and all the food, and problem solved. So that's what you have in this country, is you're allowed to walk into a hospital, no matter who you are, and get not, you're allowed to wait in 8 hours in the line like anybody else. whether you're a citizen or not, and then you have schooling, which is, of course, indoctrination. Anybody can be indoctrinated in this country for free. You're allowed to, whether you like it or not, and that sort of thing.
Not to mention welfare. I mean, you just get a check if you're a citizen.
Yeah. Oh, well, and if you're, no, we're talking about the illegals.
Well, right. What I mean is, if you're here.
If you're here. And you can, and now, of course, this, of course, goes right into, and we're gonna take a break here in just a second, but this also goes into the real ID card. So I'm gonna take a pause here.
Okay.
Can you put that thing on pause?
Absolutely.
And we'll kind of come back and talk about the national ID.
Thank you for listening to part one of the May 6th, 2007 Jimmy Dome podcast. Jimmy Dome is better than a cold shower.